the best-selling novel The Kite Runner brings to life places and people most Americans know little about. The novel delves into the recent history of Afghanistan, going back to the peaceful years before the Soviet invasion, then plunging into the more recent chaos. The author, Khalad Hosseini, was born in Afghanistan and now lives in California. His novel's partly autobiographical. One of the early scenes comes right out of Hosseini's childhood, when he used to watch kites battling in the sky above him. Here's an excerpt from the book.
At least 24 kites already hung in the sky, like paper sharks roaming for prey. Within an hour, the number doubled, and red, blue, and yellow kites glided and spun in the sky. A cold breeze wafted through my hair. The wind was perfect for kite flying, blowing just hard enough to give some lift, make the sweeps easier. Next to me, Hassan held the spool, his hands already bloodied by the string. Soon the cutting started, and the first of the defeated kites whirled out of control. They fell from the sky like shooting stars with brilliant, rippling tails, showering the neighborhoods below with prizes for the kite runners. They were coming down all over the place now, the kites, and I was still flying. A red kite was closing in on me, and I'd caught it just in time. I tangled a bit with it and ended up besting him when he became impatient and tried to cut me from below.
That's very nice. I want you to tell me a little bit more about the kites. This is not kite flying the way we understand it in the States. It appears to be a good deal more than going out on a windy afternoon with a piece of paper on some sticks with some string.
Yeah, the kite flying in Afghanistan is not purely for a leisurely thing. It's really a sport. The way it was played was that the string was rolled in a thick mixture of finely ground glass and glue. And so the string became very, very sharp. And in essence, it became a weapon. And then you used your string during a tournament to sever the other guy's line. And the objective was to be the final remaining kite in the sky. And the other side of the coin was when the kite was cut, then the kids on the street would go chasing after it. And because these battles took place way up in the sky, sometimes a kite could drift across entire neighborhoods and kid would chase it until it came down on a rooftop or a treetop or something. And then when you had it, it was kind of a trophy, a bit like catching a foul ball at a baseball game. And so I coined the phrase the kite runners for those boys who chased after the felled kites and tried to catch it as it came down.
Now, this story takes place at a time in Afghanistan that, a little like the kite flying, is a time we don't entirely know in the United States. This is Afghanistan before the Soviet invasion. It was a very different country then from the kind of place it is now?
It really was. The first third of the kite runners set in really the Afghanistan of my childhood, the late 60s and the mid-1970s. And it is a forgotten era in the country's history. It seems like Afghanistan for a long time has become synonymous with the Soviet war and with opium and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. But it used to be a good place to live. And for most of the 20th century, Afghanistan existed in peaceful anonymity. I remember coming to Paris. My family moved from Afghanistan in 1976. And people would ask me where I was from, and I would say Afghanistan. And nobody knew where it was, and they couldn't point it out on a map. Of course, those days are gone too now.
You were a diplomat's son, and in Paris, remembering where you had come from during the time when the government was changing in Afghanistan?
Yeah, the monarchy ended in 73 in a bloodless coup, and the king's cousin overtook the country in 1973. And my family moved to Paris in 1976. My father was assigned to a diplomatic post in the Afghan embassy in Paris. And so that's how I, very fortuitously as it turned out, left Afghanistan, because within 2 years, the communist coup d'etat happened and then the Soviets invaded. And I was very fortunate to be out of Afghanistan when those events happened.
It has to have been a frightening time for you and your family, I should think, because your father was attached to the old government, the one that had been overthrown. You were young enough not to have any influence over that. But for him, I suppose there must have been the question of whether he should go back or whether to stay away.
There was no way he was going back, both for reasons of safety, because a couple of his colleagues from the old regime, when their term expired, went back. And unfortunately, we heard very soon that they had been executed. And so there was that fear. And also for ideological reasons, my father did not want to work with the Communist Party in Afghanistan. And so I remember those years in Paris when our future was uncertain as a kind of a time of intrigue. And I remember my father, in retrospect, I remember he had made secret plans for us to come to the U.S., but we would when we would go someplace, he would insist that everybody wait by the door, and then he would go to the garage and turn on the car for fear that perhaps a bomb had been placed. So it kind of felt like you were living in a little bit of a Jean Le Carré espionage book.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how I remember those days.
What do you think now of the future of Afghanistan from what you've seen and from what you remember of what it used to be?
Well, you know, it sort of depends whether you look at the situation optimistically or pessimistically. You can say Afghanistan is really a disaster. The government still doesn't have much viability outside the boundaries of Kabul. The warlords really are running the show in the provinces where all the action is. The opium trade is out of control, and Afghanistan's sort of on the verge of becoming one of these narco states. And, you know, the Taliban are making a comeback along with the Al-Qaeda in the south and the east of the country, and there's these constant skirmishes. Or you could say, look, the economy is slowly recovering. Roads are being built again. There's a national currency. The government is beginning to impose itself. An army is being built. And a constitution has been approved that lays the foundation for, you know, a nascent democracy of sorts. And so there's reason for optimism as well. And as always, the truth is in neither extreme. It's probably somewhere in the middle. And so I think it's very soon, only 2 or 3 years after liberation, and Afghanistan is, you know, a work in progress.